The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Tuesday, the 18th of May, 2021. On the podcast today, Craig Martin, Chairman of Dunham Capital, the investment manager of Vietnam Holding Limited. And Craig explains why they've revised upwards their forecast portfolio earnings growth from 23% to 40%. Also on the podcast, Glenn Goodman, former ITV news business correspondent and now the author of The Crypto Trader, covers this week's Bitcoin, blockchain and cryptocurrency news. And we talk about Elon Musk and whether right now the cryptocurrency markets are in the middle of a slow car crash. Plus, at the end of the podcast, I have two lists for you. The top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours and the top five most read RNSs. By the way, you can check out these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk. You've got one there from Traders Cafe with Zach Meir, Bulletin Board Heroes, May 18th. What are you looking at? A similar angle, Synode. Kavango, Makango, my Silex, Open Orphan, Skin Biotherapeutics, Shanda Gold, and Veritech. It covers all those. Also a video there with Paul Smiley Hill talking to the guys from Cakebox. Check that video there. Also an article on Synode Connode, I don't know how to say that. Synode Connode Holdings. But ticker is CYAN. There's an article there on that. Kibo Energy, article on that. Hard-eyed article there, right there on there. So lots of content. Article on Union Jack Oil. Plenty of content articles, of course. And check out the COVID-19 index. Biggest rise of the day. So it's not a big update today. 4.44%, 3.525 pence. React Group, the biggest riser. Biggest faller. Wow, that is volatile. Hemogenix Pharmaceuticals. It's down 20% close to 1.7 pence. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Craig Martin, Chairman of Dunham Capital, which is the investment manager of Vietnam Holding. That's VNH ticker. Craig, thanks for joining me.
My pleasure. Good morning to you.
Yeah, and you've released an update, and we'll dig into that in a bit. But as always, Craig, for people not familiar with the company or what you're doing at Vietnam Holding, explain what it's all about, please.
Sure. Well, Dynam Capital is the investment manager for Vietnam Holding. And Vietnam Holding is a Vietnam-focused fund listed on the main board of the London Stock Exchange under the ticker VNH. And the fund has been a signatory of the principles of responsible investing for over a decade. So it's a fund that's got integrated ESG in its investment process, and you can buy or sell the shares on the London Stock Exchange.
Excellent stuff, yes, and it's obviously a fast-growing area there. So I see you issued your April the 30th fact sheet. It's titled The Power of Purpose. And like I say, it does sound like a sort of self-help book there, Craig. What's going on with that?
Well, we see ourselves as stewards of our investors' money. So I guess purpose is pretty important to us, and we're passionate about making strong, long-term compound returns from a fairly concentrated portfolio of companies here in Vietnam. But we're also looking for companies that have purpose. These are industry leaders such as FPT, which is Vietnam's largest digital company, provides backbone internet and broadband internet to companies and customers alike, but is also becoming one of the largest cloud companies in Vietnam and is a massive digital enabler. And also companies like Hua Phat, which is Southeast Asia's largest producer of steel. And that's purpose is building out Vietnam's growing infrastructure. And they're two of our top positions. So the purpose is also a key part of the stewardship of our portfolio winners. And they're looking at all their stakeholders. And they're also increasingly incorporating ESG, environmental social governance. And we see that as critical in the long term.
Yeah, absolutely. And so what is actually happening with the portfolio at the moment, Craig?
Well, the portfolio has about 28 stocks, 28 companies in it. And the portfolio is up 75% since the 1st of July, which is the start of our financial year. During that period, the Vietnam index was up about 55%. So, you know, generating 20% of outperformance or alpha. This calendar year, since 1st of January, we're up about 26% versus the index of about 15. Mm. And actually, the net asset value, I think just yesterday, the portfolio is at a record high, as is the share price. And that said, however, the shares still trade at a very attractive discount of about 20% to that net asset value. So people are able to buy the share and get a pound of value for ATP.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And you've increased the portfolio earning growth to 40% for 2021 just a few months ago. It was about 20%, if I recall. So forecasting proving hard, is it?
Well, good point. Look, we're probably conservative. That said, many of our portfolio companies have put through really strong first quarter numbers. And our banks, which now make up about 30% of the portfolio, have seen the net interest margins expand. They've seen profits from distributing insurance products and much lower provisions. They were probably also very conservative and cautious, you know, in their provisioning last year. And our number two company, Hua Fan, the steelmaker, is seeing volumes and prices at record levels. And they're likely to double their profit this year, so 100% growth. And they'll probably notch about $1 billion of profit. So we've adjusted the earnings forecast because the companies are you know, beating our expectations.
Okay, so what is there to look forward to over the next month or so, taking into account your forecasting skills there, Craig?
Well, look, on 4th of June, we're actually going to host a webinar about Vietnam's digital transformation, and we'll get a guest speaker from one of our portfolio companies to attend. And then in June, actually, Vietnam Holding will celebrate its 15th birthday, and Dynam Capital, our third birthday. So we've got a lot to celebrate. That said, of course, you know, with COVID, it is a bit hard to go too wild. And as we know, Vietnam has done an absolute amazing job battling COVID over the last 15 months, but is also seeing some of the new variants break out in spots, as we're seeing across Asia. So look, we hope that over the next few weeks, those new variants are quashed and the tremendous economic boom continues at the rapid rate which it started this year on.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvellous stuff. Okay, Craig, as always, and you're pretty used to this by now, if someone's liking the progress you're making out there but are not yet following the story, please give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button and add you to their watch list, please.
Number one, it's cheap. Vietnam Holding, VNH, the shares trade at a 20% discount to its net asset value. Number two, also, it's cheap. The portfolio is on a forward price earnings ratio of 11 times, so that's not too demanding. And number three, it's high growth. We estimate this 40% earning per share growth for the portfolio during the course of this year. So that's growth at a reasonable price. So they're the top three reasons for following Vietnam Holding.
Yeah, absolutely marvelous stuff. Thanks for that, Craig, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Pleasure. Thanks ever so much for your time. Keep safe.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Glenn Goodman. He's the author of The Dirty Trader, and he literally trades in a pair of old boxer shorts he hasn't worn for ages, nothing else. Is that right, Glenn? Sorry, the crypto trader. That's the last guy I was chatting to. Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry, Glenn.
You're a not clean, to be confused with the you're dirty a
clean,
trader.
You're a clean trend follower.
Right.
I don't mean that in the sense of haircut and clothes. I mean, you know, in charts and stuff like that, yeah.
Yeah, clean charts. Good good clean fun on good clean charts at the crypto trader.
Let me say one thing, right? The cryptocurrency world is a slow car crash, and we're in the middle of the start of this. People are not realizing it. You can trade it like a 2D trader like yourself, but hodling people, the people who hodl, are going to be in for a lot of pain, I believe. And I've said previous times on this podcast that I think we need to see a downgrade in valuations of 95% to get to realistic levels of valuations, because the majority of the crypto coins are absolute trash, not worth anything, They got no projects behind them, pretty much, or, you know, projects that won't be worth anything. It's like the internet boom. Like, it's obvious this is happening now, isn't it? Surely. People always said it was Elon Musk trashing Bitcoin. It wasn't. We were talking about the rollover here in the Bitcoin price for way before he started trashing it.
Yeah, a couple of weeks ago. More than a couple of weeks ago, we started talking about it, didn't we?
He maybe speeded it up, but I don't think he was the actual catalyst for everyone's blaming him. And let's be honest, he's a man of extremes. But it's not just him. It's a trillion-dollar asset or asset. That's questionable value. You
know, it always seems a little bit eerie to me the way that you get a catalyst, like in this case, you know, very obvious one with Elon Musk saying suddenly that Tesla will no longer accept bitcoins in exchange for its cars because of the environmental catastrophe that supposedly Bitcoin is causing, which is an argument I have some sympathy with, but it's ridiculous, obviously, because it was only a few weeks earlier that Tesla had said, yes, we'll be accepting Bitcoin from now on. You know, it's great. And it's like, well, nothing's changed since then in the technology. It hasn't become less environmentally friendly. So either the Tesla board didn't do any kind of due diligence into what Bitcoin actually was and how it works before they decided to start accepting it for their coins, or what, actually? What's the alternative explanation?
Yeah, but I don't understand how you can accept Bitcoin for payment. I don't know how many people did. Any people would do that, I suppose.
Well, put it this way. Within a couple of weeks, Tesla had admitted that nobody had bought a car with Bitcoin.
So there we are.
But they might have done since that announcement.
The thing is, when you have an asset, let's call it an asset. It's self-fulfilling. Like I said, when you get something that's performed better than any other asset for 10 years, then you know it becomes an asset because all fund managers get pressure from big high net worth saying, I want exposure to Bitcoin, so then it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. But of course, when anything rises stratospherically, it is that, you know, sell-off. It's that people have fear of losing profit, not fear of just missing out. You've got that as well, but fear of losing profit. So why would you buy a car with Bitcoin? If you've done very well out of Bitcoin, first of all, you think it's going to go further up, maybe. Yeah. And so you do want to buy a car with Bitcoin because you could, you know, buy it, or it could come down. So either way, either party are going to be, you know, you can have something a bit stable. I got to laugh, right? People are saying that the whole thing about climate change is so many sort of moving parts and, hypocrisies and ironies here. It's like Elon Musk, he's a tech guy. He knows about Bitcoin. Why only now was he saying it's good, bad for the climate? And I think it's like Tim Draper.
It can't be him, can it?
No, it can't.
If you actually look at his announcement, he just put, what was it? His tweet was something like, it was very dry, very
he never
not
does statements.
Like him.
Yeah.
It was just kind of like, here is a statement from Tesla about Bitcoin. It didn't sound like it was coming from his mouth.
No, there was pressure from the board, whatever, and exactly, it was a statement on a document that he never does that on Twitter. Scroll by, all he does is like poo emojis and rockets, that's all he does.
It's just obvious, isn't it? Some of the board must have just not known what Bitcoin was when they went ahead with the decision to accept Bitcoin. And then they read an article in the Washington Post or something that said Bitcoin's really environmentally unfriendly. And so then the next board meeting, they were like, well, I just found out that Bitcoin's not environmentally friendly. We can't be accepting this. It's bound to be something like that, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I don't understand. Tim Draper, right, on LinkedIn, now he's very, you know, pro-Bitcoin, isn't he, and blockchain and all that. And I'm pro-blockchain, you know. I think the technology is very good. It's going to be the future, of course, but 3,000 coins can't be the future. It's just ridiculous. What I'm saying, he's on here. Sure enough, Bitcoin uses less energy than banking industry, and it scales up without commutes and customers driving to local branches. He's in a chart, right, of the banking system compared to gold and Bitcoin. Three-bar chart here. Estimated annual consumption of terawatts per year, I think it is. And he's got, like, banking system, 250. Gold, just below that, 225. Bitcoin, 125. I think that's a huge amount of energy for Bitcoin, considering, basically, it's a trader's asset that has no use. The banking system is what we rely on for everyone to feed themselves and make their banks, businesses work, everything. So, to me, that's really, I mean, people are liking that, saying, yes, well done, Tim. Are you kidding? I didn't realize Bitcoin was anywhere near that much compared to the banking system.
I guess the point they're making is that Bitcoin has the potential, that kind of, to replace much of the banking system and many of the facilities.
It won't. Bitcoin will not replace it.
To some degree. I mean, it's a real stretch, that argument, isn't it? So, yeah, I'm mainly on your side on that one. I think it's a dodgy argument. There's some truth to it. Yes, Bitcoin doesn't do very much of use right now because hardly anybody uses it for anything other than as a speculative asset. But the point is that it could easily be reconfigured to replace many moving parts of the banking industry. And what's more, it wouldn't need to use much more energy than it currently does in order to fulfill those functions. So hypothetically, the argument kind of stands, but in reality, as you point out, it ain't working right now.
If the banking system collapsed tomorrow, we'd all be in trouble, all of us.
Yeah.
And like we nearly were in the Great Financial Crisis. If Bitcoin collapsed tomorrow, we wouldn't be in trouble. You know, who would be in trouble? I don't know anyone would be in trouble. You'd probably get a lot of miners in China be in trouble. Who else?
Miners in China's.
Who else would be in trouble? No one.
No. Actually, I read a very interesting argument about miners in China yesterday by Peter Thiel's former portfolio manager. So quite a senior figure in the world of finance. And his point was that because most of the mining goes on in China, but most of the holders of Bitcoin or a large proportion of them live in America, in theory, this is something that China could hold over America. They could use it as a bargaining tool or even a threat because, you know, at the moment, it seems like mining is pretty much outlawed in China and the Chinese government has very little, if anything, to do with it. But the fact remains that, of course, the Chinese government can and sometimes does control pretty much everything that goes on in China when it fancies, like it takes over entire industries if it feels like it. And so the potential is there for it to take over the Bitcoin mining industry. And if it did take it over, it would potentially be able to cause some very serious damage to Bitcoin and to the holders of Bitcoin who, as I say, largely live in America. This is something that I don't think people have really considered before. And the only argument that came back from a senior Bitcoin senior figure in the Bitcoin community who was arguing about this, his only argument back was, well, that's even more reason for the US government to get involved and to try and build up mining capabilities in America and to protect Bitcoin owners. So suddenly he's like effectively calling for Bitcoin owners to be protected by the US government against China. It's something I hadn't considered before. It's just another thing to worry about for Bitcoin in the future. But anyway, let's go back to the price, because that's what people are really interested in this week and whether it's rolling over or not. I put out a tweet yesterday. I don't know if you saw where I gave a major warning, as I put it. I'd already given a warning a few days before, but I was like, major warning, because from a chart perspective, Bitcoin is looking very dodgy indeed and is currently in the process of or very near to testing a very important line of support, which is basically the previous high that Bitcoin made back on the 9th of January. We're all the way back, or yesterday, we were all the way back almost to that point. And it's very psychologically damaging to traders when a trend reverses itself and then goes down past the previous important high. You know, we want to see charts making higher highs and higher lows, and then another higher high, and then another higher low, you know, like a staircase. That's what traders like to see. And when that stops happening, because you've gone down past the previous high, then that, as I say, it can be psychologically damaging, which means that a lot of people have their confidence in the future of Bitcoin shaken, and that can, you know, cause a snowball effect and lead to a cascading downwards. Now, so far we haven't had that, because since yesterday we've actually seen, I'm speaking on Tuesday morning, we're recording this, the price is holding still above that previous high in January, which is good news for now. It means that there's enough buying support there every time it goes down to that line to push the price back up. So I don't think it's a foregone conclusion yet that Bitcoin's on its way down. I don't think we're back in a bear market by any stretch of the imagination.
I think it is, though, because do you know what I kept saying today? I said, there's so many delusional hodlers with Bitcoin that it's got a phenomenal amount of strength, momentum, you know? So whenever a sell-off happens generally, they come in and support it. And they'll buy on buying this.
Which is what they're doing now.
Yeah, sure. But when you get this, like, beyond a certain level, like I say, you can't help it. It's like, I think there's a slow car crash happening and people are supporting it. I think it'll go lower because I've looked at the RSI compared to the share price. And I said, you could see the strength here. Because even from January, I'm looking at one, two, three, four highs to the high. So we had January, which you were talking about, with $40,000 basically. The RSI went down, but the share price went up. And then it created a new high, 57,000 in February. And then it went a new high again, even though the RSI went down again. So you're showing these rallies are not as as fast and as big as the previous ones. It went to 60,000, and then a new high again, 63,000. The RSI has gone below now 70, and it's dipping down. And then the next high, highest made, is lower than the last high. And the RSI has dipped down, hit 30. And it hasn't hit this for a long time. And now it's down, even down at 40. So I think, that 40,000 level, it may hold it a little bit. But I think it's going to have a roll down.
You think it'll be taken out eventually?
Yeah, well, I think if it takes out this previous low it's just had, it's recently hit, that's a 42,100. If it goes below that again, 42,100, that's not really good because that's temporary support. And if you look at draw a line across from that, it also was supported there on the 1st of March and pretty much February. So if it breaks that down, there was support lines. I think 42,100 there.
Yeah, I agree. Lower. Well, so, that's what I'm saying. That is the January high that I'm talking about. If it breaks through that, then the chart starts looking very ugly. Whereas at this point in time, I mean, this is always the problem because we're recording this on Tuesday morning. This may be irrelevant in just a few hours' time.
There's never a problem. People can put in time for it in context. This will be out this afternoon, so it's fine, but it's never a problem. It's not going to go berserk. I mean, people look back on this and say, you can look back at our last few podcasts. I've been sort of oddly, and you've got to stick to sometimes. Even though, like I said, very odd, the RSI is going down, but the share price is going up. That's called price divergence. Generally, that's bearish, But I said, there's so much momentum and strength of Bitcoin, you don't know where it's going to go. And yet, in the end, it's proven right. The strength has gone down, and it's getting weaker and weaker.
It is getting weaker and weaker, you're right, because these rallies back upwards have been pretty weak in the last few days, and that is very worrying. It shows that there's it's almost like a gravity is pulling it down towards that line. And as I say, once it breaks, if it manages to break down through the January high, and even if it's just like a quick move down and then straight back up, then that's normal price behavior, and you could expect perhaps to even see a full recovery and back to new highs and all the rest of it. But if it breaks down through the January high through 42,000 and then goes a fair bit lower and then just kind of stays there at least until the end of the working day, at least until we get a full day's candle down, then that is the psychological damage. That,
Well, I tell you what we'll tell. I'll tell you how we'll tell this. Let's put a line in the sand here. And the ultimate decision here is based on your holding of Bitcoin or whatever. What are you holding at the moment? Are you holding any?
Not Bitcoin, no. I sold it a while ago, but I've got a couple of other little cryptos.
What you got?
Do I want to say what I've got right now? I don't know. I just feel like...
What are you worried about?
I feel I want to play my cards close to my chest right now for some reason. Because I don't want people, people chip in with their views on what I've got.
That's the whole point of a podcast, though, isn't it?
That's true, but I just don't
I don't want your opinion. What, do you want to be a dictator? I don't want your opinion. I've been saying... Do you know what I got to say? A lot of the time, people's opinions are annoying. I'm very opinionated.
Yeah, I just don't feel like hearing people's opinions on me today. But what I will say is I'm watching very closely XRP, because if you look at the chart, it's really resisting that dragging down of, we're being all kind of, look at Bitcoin. Even Ethereum is being pulled way down by this Bitcoin negativity. But XRP, Ripple, is still... Look at a daily chart or a four-hourly chart. You've got to admit that looks like it's shaping up for a big breakout to the upside.
Yeah,
which is really interesting, because if Bitcoin falls heavily, can XRP resist that? I don't know if any crypto can resist that.
No, I know, but I was just going to say, at the moment, that's a trouble. Now that Bitcoin is dominant, I think sooner or later, surely this dominance has to be broken to allow other cryptos to enjoy the potential.
Now's not the time. I mean, especially with XRP, with Ripple having a court case hanging over it. Yeah. It would be remarkable if it were able to break out on its own.
No, I'm not saying now. Hang on, let me question you.
It's environmentally more friendly. Some of the environmentally more friendly ones are doing well.
Trendman. You're the trendman, yeah?
But is XRP
in a trend?
Yeah, I mean, it's in a very strong upward trend. Has been for months and months.
What do you look at?
It's had a bit of a correction, and it's now shaping up into a symmetrical triangle, you know, classic kind of continuation pattern shape. So I'm tempted, if it goes through, if it breaks out of this little triangle, or big triangle shape that it's forming, if it breaks out upwards and I've got an alert set on my chart, then I may buy it. And that feels weird to me, because when we're feeling so kind of doubting about the rest of the crypto world and how everything seems to have been going down along with Bitcoin in recent days, and even it would feel odd to buy, to open a new position in Ripple a fair bit higher than the point that we are at now. And yet, you know, if I follow my system, then I've got to buy. My system.
I didn't know your sister was a trader as well. Okay, so I'm looking at the XRP versus dollar chart. Is that right? Is that what I can look at? And so I'm looking at it broke up sort of towards what 1.89 in April. Is that right? Came back down, consolidated, came back up. Now it's at 1.6. So I'm saying it's in a range here, isn't it? Almost like a 1.8 is the place to beat. Is it the resistance level?
I'm thinking even lower than that. For XRP, if you draw a little triangle around these,
I don't want to draw a triangle.
Highs.
Oh, like 3 or 7.
If you draw a little symmetrical triangle, you'll see the breakout.
Draw your triangles, children.
Round about 1.67. $1.67 is around about where it would break out of that triangle. Sure, but it would need to get to about 180 to beat the previous intermediate high, which is, I guess, what you just mentioned.
So I don't like triangles. Do you mind if I draw a rectangle?
Yeah, by all means. But it'll have to be have diagonal edges if it's going to go around the XRP price. So then it kind of becomes a triangle, I'm afraid. Okay. Or a rectangle if you kind of put your head to one side, I suppose.
Yeah, okay.
Cock your head.
All right, so XRP. So anything else you're in? You said you're in now. When did you get in it?
No, I'm not. I'm saying I would consider buying XRP if it breaks through the upper boundary of this triangle.
I would consider it. I'm being careful.
But I made a good point. I made a point on that tweet yesterday, and it might have sounded a bit smug, but I was kind of saying, if you'd followed the moving average crossover system that I outlined in my book, then you would have been in Bitcoin at 10,500 and out of it at about 55,000 for, I think it was about 425%, 423% gain. Mm. And I'm not saying that people should necessarily have used that moving average crossover system, or indeed that I'm not using it either. But here's the thing, is that it gives you a kind of guideline to how perhaps you should trade if you're a trend following kind of trader, like the approximate points where it's good to enter and where it's good to exit. And what you can see from that page in my book is that basically, if we'd been in the 2017 market, you would have been in and out of the market. You would have been in and out of Bitcoin a few times over the course of that bull market. So you wouldn't have necessarily stayed in for the entire time. When you follow a kind of trend following system, you have to find that nice balance between being in for a long time, which is great, but not staying in so long that when the market eventually does end the bull and start the bear, you're still in. You don't want to be in that long. Okay. So it's kind of, you're finding a middle ground between the two. And a moving average crossover would have got you in quite early on, and it would have got you out a fair bit higher than we are now. But that doesn't preclude the possibility of getting back in if this turns out to be just a correction, which it might be. This doesn't mean, you know, what we're seeing right now doesn't definitely mean we're at the end of this bull market. You know, it could recover, particularly if it doesn't break through that 42,000 level. It could recover and we could get to new highs. And across a moving average system would get you back in a little bit higher than we are at now. And that would be fine. You know, that's
what did I say?
That's a way of trading. Anyway, sorry, you were going to make some points.
What did I say? We had some price predictions, didn't we, the other week, remember? Not last week, week before.
Yeah, I said I refused to make
and I said Bitcoin below 50K. It was at the time, it was about 50, 55, I think. And Ethereum below 3K was Ethereum at the most. Not, it's 3.5, it's not quite there. And you said it would be above 60K.
No, I didn't. I didn't
and
say
Ethereum
anything.
Ethereum above 5K,
say,
you said.
I did not say, and I never make predictions.
Okay, one other thing. One other thing on your tweet there. Two things on that tweet, okay?
Try to defame me. This is
Two things on that tweet. If you use a 20-day moving average, 50-day moving average crossover system I showed in my book, you'd have been in at 10,500 and out at 55,000. That's a 423% gain. Now, first and foremost, put a link to your book, yeah? That would help you along, maybe. That's marketing 101. If you're going to put, if you're going to sort of pump something that's worth pumping, you know, put a link to it. Be crass. You've got to.
Yeah,
some
no,
people,
right.
Some
I
people will not
that.
Say, "Where's the book link?" And second,
I didn't even think that.
Retweet that again now and say, "Oh, by the way, some people have been asking for my book link. Here it is."
Some people.
Yeah, I've had lots of emails. Let's just say that I've had lots of letters. And,
yeah, so many. I can't reply to them personally.
I've had a lot of letters. I don't do letters anymore. But people said, "Where's the link to my book?" Here it is. Yeah. And you should put a what's name on there.
I'm the worst marketer in the world.
Can you put a code on there? A promotional code. Use the code Dirty Trader. You get 10% off.
Yeah.
Secondly, you can't just say on a podcast, you know, this is where I, of course, I don't follow that system. Don't say that. Just stand behind the system you outlined in the book, surely.
Well, no, I do stand behind the system.
Or is it one of many systems?
I mean, I have used that same system or a very similar one in the past. I've done systematic trading is in the past, you know, designed my own little systems like that and then traded them. But at the moment, I'm a discretionary trader at this point in my life through choice, but not necessarily. But you know, I
probably can't opt to what you want to
hang
on.
Follow
hang
the
on.
System, you know,
you basically saying that you've gone from you can't say you're a discretionary trader. You're just basically saying you've got no plan. That's what you're saying.
No, but
I'm all over the place.
I mean, I'm a trend.
I have
follower.
A plan.
No, I mean, I'm a trend follower. But it's because I've used things like moving average crossover systems in the past that I built up a kind of intuition for how to do trend following in a discretionary way. You know, the approximate levels at which to buy and at
I know
which
what you
to
mean.
Sell.
You can't buy experience. So, you know, the thing is, the whole point is you can't. A book helps people gain a bit more experience more quickly. You can't.
Yeah.
You can't buy experience. I know the same thing. So I've got a share pickers investment club. And I've tried to actually map out what I do, but it's quite hard because I said sometimes I've got these nine sort of filters, these rules. So sometimes a company will not fit some of these filters or rules. You have to realize in your head, just by experience, sometimes you know it doesn't matter that they don't match this filter or that filter. And that just comes with experience. You can't help that. But I'm trying to sort of formulate it, as strategize it as much as possible if you're new to it. So then you try and realize what you're looking for and what to avoid. But like you said, you can, when you have a bit of experience, you can sort of go off-piste a little bit sometimes. Not too much. Because if you go way too off-piste, you get up to your neck in snow. And this isn't the way I should be.
I mean, I guess the key point, whether you're following a trend following system, you know, an automatic system like the moving average one, or you're doing it in a discretionary fashion, the key point either way is that you want to be getting in and out of the market, but not very often. So, you know, we're only talking about getting in and out of the market maybe once every few months, something like that, in order to capture the maximum profit possible while also protecting yourself. Because that's what this is about. I'm not in Bitcoin anymore right now because I'm protecting myself against what, as we've described, may turn out to be a big downtrend. It might turn out to be a big downtrend, but nobody knows the future. Nobody knows whether this will just suddenly reverse itself and go back up or not. So what I'm doing is protecting myself by being out at this point, but I'm perfectly prepared to change my mind 180 degrees and get back in if it turns out that this was a false breakdown and that, you know, that the breakdown fails and we head back up significantly and the chart starts looking more positive. I'll be getting back in. And I
may miss out
on a portion of profit because of that, because I got out and then get back in. I might miss out on a bit of profit compared to how I would be if I had just stayed in the whole time. But you can see my getting out and getting back in as an insurance policy. That's what it is. Yeah, it's protecting myself against a big loss.
Let me say one thing. Trends, are basically, they can change upon, the definition of a trend can change based on the time frame, can't they? Because, I mean, we know longer trends, they'll hold firmer. You know, so if, that's why I always look at daily charts. You're a trader, a daily trader looks at small time frame charts. So you can say it's still in an uptrend, Bitcoin, on a daily or whatever. But it's not, if you look at rolling over, it's gone now, the 20-day moving average, like you said, it's gone over the 50-day. It's now down, the price itself is down below the 125. That hasn't happened since Bitcoin was, hang on, let's have a look. This is, in fact, let me find out.
You find out.
That hasn't happened since pretty much October 2020, when it was down at 10,000.
Exactly.
So this is
a trend. That's why I said the crossover system would have got you in back down then, around September, October 2020, and it would have got you out about a week ago.
This is a trend. This is a trend breaking down. Okay, you may have not have confirmation of it, but it doesn't look like the uptrend has stopped. The downtrend may not have started properly, but it's closer to a downtrend now than an uptrend.
Stopped. Yeah, you're quite right. It may resume, though. Yeah. It may resume. I mean, that's the thing. You know, I could find you. I've tried to post patterns online, but, I could find you exactly this kind of head and shoulders pattern that we're seeing at the top for Bitcoin here. I can find you in the history books of charts, followed by a massive downward move. In fact, I posted one yesterday in response to somebody's query. Which thing did I use? Where is it? Do you know the one I mean? Did you see that when I said that? Hold on, it only took me a second to find. I've got it.
It's 11 o'clock.
No, hold on, here it is. It's the S&P 500 from 2015. And I found the chart where you got your head and shoulders and then a massive, massive decline before then a really massive recovery.
Yeah, that was Fed-based, probably. That was liquidity.
Probably. Sometimes you have that kind of pattern, but sometimes you get a really shallow decline after a head and shoulders and then a massive recovery. So the point is, you can't predict. Just because you've got a pattern, it doesn't mean that it tells you what is definitely going to happen next. It tells you what's probably going to happen next, but far from definite. So that's why you have to, as a trend follower, think about all the possibilities that might occur and how you might profit from each and every one of those possibilities. So that's kind of what I'm doing here.
Yeah. Okay.
Do you see?
Yeah, Morris Glenn, I see what you're saying. I'm just agreeing. It's 11 o'clock. Thanks for that, fella. And any price predictions for Bitcoin for next week?
There's absolutely no predictions, none. I have zilch predictions for you. And I never will, because I'm a man of integrity.
It's always good to end a laugh. Marvellous stuff, Glenn. Thanks for that. Speak next week.
All right, bye then.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five. Guild Esports, down 3% to 7.65 pence. At four, Bold Opportunities. It's now CIZ, ticker there. And that's up 7.4% to 7.6 pence. At three, Hemogenix Pharmaceuticals, down 20% to 1.7 pence. At two, Shield Therapeutics, down 1.8 to 55. And at one, Love Hemp Group, non-mover, as I can see there, 3.25 pence. I'm talking about hemp and cannabis. Ananda, which is a company I have a tiny holding in. I think I bought the IPO and I've forgotten about it, basically. It's not even in my ISA. But at the moment, it's up, 50, 60%? Because the grant of home office license there. So one of the companies they're involved with has been granted a license to grow cannabis for research activities by the UK government Home Office. So that's a positive development right there. Okay, top five most read RNSs are as follows. At five, Tertiary Minerals, formation of Zambian subsidiary. At 4, Union Jack Oil, Wrestle Development Update. At 3, Hemogenics, loan note sale and conversion facility terminated. At 2, Escape Hunt, final results for the year. And some excellent operational progress there during lockdown for a leisure company. I don't know if any other, I'm biased, of course I'm biased, I hold stock. I don't know if any other leisure company has progressed so well during lockdown operationally. Phenomenal. They've increased their operator sites by 110%. And at 1, Tiziana Life Sciences, final results. Check those out at voxmarkets.co.uk. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciado.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.